Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. It's good to be here with you again, and I want to welcome all our listeners to the next chapter with Charlie. I am Charlie Hedges, and this is a show where we discuss ideas for you and your next chapter. And today is going to be a subject that is about your next chapter, but it's about how you proceed through your next chapter. And this is another one of our solo-sodes, which today I want to chat with you and our producer, Paul, about a subject that is most dear to me. Bottom line, it's about making a positive impact on each of the lives of other people that we meet, from the ones that we love the most to anyone else that we may engage in a meaningful conversation. As I have stated often on the show, my primary goal in life, I've discovered, may sound silly, may sound simple, but this is my primary goal in life, and it is to help people feel better about themselves. I want people, after they spent time with me, to walk away and feel better about themselves. Not feel better about me, but about themselves. And it's really not all that difficult. It requires only that you, in some way, communicate to that person that they are important to you. It's really that simple, that you communicate in some way that that person is important to you. Now, obviously, there are myriad ways you can do that, but today I would like to focus on one thing, and I'm calling it the art of a caring conversation. Although the word conversation implies a two-way interaction, it is really all too often a one-way conversation held by two people, that each person has their goals and their ideas in mind, their own agenda, and their own things that they want to talk about, and so they're listening with intent to speak. I know one time, this is difficult to explain, but it was one of the most comical situations I'd ever seen. My wife was having a conversation with another woman, and I was just a third party listening. I was not a part of this conversation. And I realized early on in the conversation, they were talking about two totally different subjects. Two totally different subjects. And yet, there was enough similarity in the subject that they thought they were talking about the same subject. And they were answering each other and responding to each other. And I'm sitting there baffled. And all of a sudden, I just start break out in hilarity, laughing. And they're saying, "What are you laughing about?" And when I explain to them, you know, "Barbara," that's not her name, "Barbara, you're talking about this, right?" "Yeah." "Pam, you're talking about that, right?" "Yeah, you mean that's not our conversation?" And it comes where, I'm not saying anything negative about these women, it just comes with our lack of art of conversation, and that we don't really try to engage in the other person. I've operated for more than three decades on a belief that I learned from a psychologist, again, over three decades ago, and that people have three primary innate needs. One, to be heard. Two, to be accepted. And generally, that's accepted by something that we view as important or significant. And three is to be cared for or cared about. To be heard, to be accepted, and to be cared about. And when we discover a sense, when we discover these, we also discover a sense of well-being and deep personal satisfaction. So today, what I'd like to do, and this will most likely be a shorter podcast, but I can ramble, so you can never tell. And I want to talk about the first need, and that is the need to be heard. I think we all have this need to be heard and as a result, to be accepted. And as a result of that, to be cared for. And today I want to talk about listening and suggest three traits that will make for an excellent listener. And the three traits are quite simple: kindness, empathy, and curiosity. That's it. If you demonstrate those three traits in a conversation, a person will walk away from you thinking much better about themselves, feeling much safer about themselves, and having a good feeling about themselves. And ironically, they're going to have a good feeling about you. They're going to think you are really this ideal person that really gets them. Now, I'm sure many of you catching this podcast have probably attended some class on listening, and I will most certainly agree with a lot of it, and I'll probably break some rules, but that's to be expected. You know, I think it was, Paul, wasn't it at night in the 80s that Stephen Covey wrote The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People?
Something
I think
seems
it was
like
the
that.
80s, yeah, yeah, and it was an extraordinarily popular book, you know, maybe one of the most popular books ever written. I don't know. I mean, it just, you know, it's going to be in the top 50. And one of his habits, of his seven habits, was this: to listen with intent to understand, not to be understood. Listen with the intent to understand, not to be understood. While most of us listen with what intent, Paul? What do you think?
I'm sorry, I wasn't listening. What would you say? We obviously, as my dad would say, and we've certainly heard it many times, we have two ears and one mouth, but we use it in the exact opposite proportion here.
I have never heard that.
Oh, you've heard it. No,
that's it. You've nailed it. We listen with the intent to respond.
Yeah.
We're looking for something that we can say, and it's a ooh, ooh, ooh. And as soon as we hit this ooh, 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 yeah, we don't hear a damn word that the other person said until we can get our words out.
I'm very guilty of that.
Well, most of us are. Because it goes back to that innate need, does it not? It goes back to that innate need of being heard and being accepted. And so we want to be heard and we want to be appreciated for what we think without consideration to the other person that we've just interrupted and discounted everything they have to think.
I think you just defined American politics today. I know you don't want to get into a political discussion, but and we were having this prior to the going on the air. You know, I rant and rave about the state of politics these days, like so many do, right or left. And maybe it's just that simple. Both sides are screaming. They scream. You're not listening, and they scream louder because they want to be heard and they want to be accepted. And they're not really interested in your point of view, whether you're on the left or the right.
And that is what we need to show in a conversation.
Yeah.
In a
I never thought of it that way, but I think that's really it. They're screaming to be heard,
yes,
and they're screaming to be accepted.
Yes, yes. And what if we actually take the time to listen, to be empathetic, to be curious, and really feel like I get where you're coming from.
Yeah.
I understand where you're coming from. What do you think about this? Rather than saying,
yeah,
this is why you're wrong, this is what needs to be changed, what do you think about this? I really love the idea of when I am, if I am in the advice mode. I think I've said this before. I don't give advice. I make suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
I say, have you considered? Is this a possibility? Is this something that would help? Rather than, Paul, this is what you need to do.
Right.
Because as soon as I say that, you know, you're going to look at me and say, screw you. you know, what do you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Too often, I think, we feel isolated in our own experience, in our old troubled experience, and that we feel very few people understand us, and even fewer care that we're experiencing some personal drama that feels at this point overwhelming. And all that person needs is for somebody to show care, that I give a rip. I care what's going on with you. And what better way can we do this than by listening with kindness, empathy, and curiosity, which I am going to explain in a bit more detail, because It's really interesting.
Do you think most people do that today? Because I think we live in an age when most of us don't think our voice is heard, and that's why they're frustrated and we get loud and shout. I think most of us aren't curious to know about the other side. I'm wagging my finger at you and going to tell you what to do. Just shut up and do what I say you should do. Parents, governments, anybody, we're all in this mode. And I don't think there's much empathy.
Empathy's
out.
And you know what? And really, of all of these, you know what I think is the difference maker is curiosity. Now, see, I am an abnormally curious person. That's why I do all of my travel.
Right.
But now when I'm talking to people, I'm curious. Tell me more about what you think about this. Explain to me more. Without me making judgments on what they're explaining, I'm asking them to explain it more in detail and more in detail. And that person will absolutely blabber on.
Yes, they will.
About it, because finally they get that somebody is listening.
Yeah, right.
So what I want to do is I want to do something really, really kind of different today. And I want to describe a conversation that I had yesterday.
A real conversation.
A real conversation.
Okay.
With a real troubled person. And he didn't need advice. What he needed was somebody to listen and somebody to care that he was indeed troubled. Now, I have called this person on the phone, asked their permission if I do this podcast. And I said, I promise I will not reveal. No one will know who you are. No one will be able to figure out who you are. But I want to talk about some specific aspects of our conversation. And I received his opinion. So please don't think I go around telling everybody every conversation
right.
I have with
right.
people.
Right.
This was, and he was all for it. He says, I can't wait to listen to the podcast to see what it's about. But you know what I'd like to do? Before I get into this conversation, Paul, I want to, let me just briefly describe my definition of kindness, empathy, and curiosity.
Okay.
And this is really, you know what's really sort of ironic maybe about this is yesterday I do daily journal entries.
Right.
And I did a daily journal entry on conversation and on helping people feel better about themselves. And I wrote about kindness, empathy, and curiosity. And I said, man, that's it. If I just listen with those three tenets, I can really make a difference. And then I get this email from a friend who's in deep trouble and wants to have a conversation. And it just so happens, Paul, that I went to the conversation with these three traits on my mind.
Wow.
They wouldn't have ordinarily been front of mind. But these were front of mind, and it may have been one of the most powerful conversations I've had for months.
Hmm.
And this person was actually really helped. As a matter of fact, he felt very weak in the position he was at. He left, and he went back, and he just kicked butt at work. He was just ready to go back.
Good.
He was able to verbal vomit it all out.
Verbal vomit. I like that.
You know, he was able to verbal vomit it all out. And I wasn't afraid. I had a cloth. I wasn't afraid of wiping it off. You know, it's
right.
just what they have.
Right.
So let's go through each of these really quickly.
Okay.
I don't want to go into depth in them a bit. But kindness, so we're going to talk about kindness, empathy, and curiosity. Kindness, I believe I walk into a conversation and I need to be thinking about, I need to be kind. That is, and kindness is primarily a nonverbal experience.
And what is kindness
that's,
for you? Okay, so it's nonverbal. What does it mean? How is it different than empathy? Empathy is feeling for them, caring, having feelings. How is kindness?
Yes, but kindness could be an expression of the empathy. But kindness, the way I'm looking at it, is a very nonverbal experience in that, one, it's the sound of your voice.
Mm, you know, the tone,
what are you coming at? How are you doing this? Do they feel sympathetic? Do they feel that you feel sympathetic or that you feel understanding? They don't, and they don't want to feel like, oh, I'm a loser and you're and I'm just coming to you with this. They want to feel like I'm really okay, but I'm just dealing with this issue and I need some help with this issue. And so my kindness would come out. It comes out with the caring look in your eye, including tender eye contact. Eye contact is really crucial. And
we've all had the experience where somebody's talking to you and they're looking past you, looking around you, looking at their watch.
Looking at the watch is a looking at the watch or answering. And I have a guy that I work with that answers his text while he's talking to me. And I, you know, he's a millennial and I just, you know, I'm not going to go there. Just let him do it because it doesn't bother him. You know, he can multitask, he can do work. And so it's my issue. It's not his issue.
But it's that verbal cue that you're not worth me stopping.
Cue. It is that cue. So kindness is that, and I think it's a tone of voice. I think it's something that you project. You just sort of immerse yourself in this concept of kindness. What does kindness feel like and look like? And kindness says, I care about you. I care about how you feel. I am here to listen to what you have to say, and I'm really going to focus my attention on you. And they feel accepted, and they feel understood in that. Now, the difference in empathy.
Can I ask you one other one that would be free
going
further? Of course,
please.
This is going to sound old-fashioned and Midwestern. How about politeness? Is that enter into kindness at all? Is that an accompaniment to kindness? Because today, most people aren't polite. They're rude. They're crude. They're quick.
Oh, absolutely. Politeness would be subsumed under kindness. You know, the kind person is not rude, is not short-tempered, is not adversarial. You know, those are all the negative things of it. You know,
confrontational, adversarial, loud.
Confrontational. Right. Oh yes.
But that
because
projects...
confrontational really is what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to make my point. As soon as I get into confrontational, my point is more important than your point.
But isn't that what all the news shows? Isn't that what the celebrity reality shows? Isn't that what we're bombarded with all day, this image of people in your face, beating you down, coming from a power position, I'm right, you're wrong.
Yeah, makes for great TV and shitty life.
Conflict. I like that.
Yeah. But I take, here's the way I view empathy, and I think if we're not careful, we can misuse empathy. I believe it's an essential attribute to intimate and caring conversation, that I can somehow find a place in my experience that I can identify to some degree with your experience, that I can go down in there and I'm empathizing with you, and that feeling, working really hard at not feeling what I would feel if I were you in your situation, but what you feel in your situation. Mm. And that brings in later curiosity, because I have to ask questions to get that. But I want to know how you feel in this situation. And when I see it misused.
Not how I think you should feel.
Exactly. Not how I think you should feel, or how I, it's even worse than that, how I know how you feel. Because far too often when we're talking to somebody and they describe a situation that has some similarity and it's with an experience that we had with ourselves, we have a tendency to say, or people have a tendency to say, I know just how you feel.
Yeah. And boy, doesn't that tick you off when somebody says that?
Why is that?
I don't know. You think that's a way to bond with them. I know how you feel. No, you don't know how I feel.
Yeah, there's a way to communicate that, because you want to let them know they're not isolated.
Right.
They're not the only person in the world that feels that way. But I don't know what I wrote down here, and I put it in uppercase letters. We never know exactly how anyone else feels at any given point. I cannot totally place myself into your being. I must ask a lot of questions. So,
because how you feel is a culmination of who you are and all the experiences you've been through.
Exactly.
I might have been beat down. You might have been beat down. I might have come to accept it. You might rage every time it happens. You know, because of whatever happened in your life, same thing happens. Your reaction is not the same as mine.
Exactly. And there I go. I'm saying exactly, and I'm just saying don't say exactly.
Exactly.
by saying this, we run the risk of dismissing the importance of the issue in that person's life. If I say I know exactly how you feel, then it's not all that important because, you know.
It's not all that unique.
Yeah.
We've been through. Oh, that's what you're upset about. All that.
That's funny, and I used that word later on. When I wrote, it's good for us to know the importance of the issue in this person's life, and that they are not alone. Mm-hmm. They are not isolated. So there is a healthy part to that. If stated correctly, that you're not isolated, you're not all alone.
Right.
There's other people that have dealt with similar situations. But we are going to treat your situation uniquely. We're going to treat it as if it's extraordinarily valuable to you, and only you are experiencing it in this way. And that's what the empathy is all about. It's all about trying to understand that from that person's point of view. Now, I listen to them. There's only one way I can clarify that, and that's what I call curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where I must continually say, tell me more. Tell me more. How do you feel about that? What describe for me the situation you're in so that I can understand and I can grasp that, and we can walk through this hand in hand. Brother and brother, brother and sister. So here's what I want to do.
But, you know, I just got to point out a couple of things there. You can't have a conversation if you're not curious. You can have somebody tell you something. You can tell them something. But for it to have a back and forth attitude, I've got to have some, really? I don't understand. You made a point. I had to tell me more. I don't understand that. I don't understand that. I don't agree with that. I've never heard that before. There's something that's provoked that you want that you want to know more about. You can't have a conversation if you're not curious.
I'm silent, which I'm not allowed to do on radio. I'm silent because you've got me pondering.
Really?
You cannot have. Let's call it a meaningful conversation.
Yes, right.
You cannot have. You know,
you can have the appearance of a conversation.
Yeah.
You can talk about. The weather.
You know, and whatever we're going to do. But if you're going to have a meaningful conversation, there must be curiosity. And yet, I think it's even more lacking than kindness and empathy.
I agree.
I think curiosity.
Because we live in a world where we only reinforce what we already believe. I don't want to challenge anything I believe. We self-select. We move into neighborhoods, and not just economically, but socially. I don't know what I'm trying to say without trying to be polite about saying, but there's a reason I don't live in the Deep South. I don't think I'd feel comfortable in that culture, right?
No.
I like big cities. I like open-minded attitudes. That's why I left the Midwest. I didn't like the kind of closed-minded attitude I found. So we moved to neighborhoods where people, we live on social media now with like-minded people. We live in the bubble all day. We watch news programs that reinforce what we believe. We live in more and more of an isolated bubble.
Yes, and we don't get the experience of other people. That's why I value travel.
Yes,
as a matter
right.
of fact, I just heard a podcast with my man Tim Ferriss and another guy, and they
I'd love to get Tim on the show.
What's the number one piece of advice you would give to somebody who has 6 months and wants to learn and wants to do? And Mm-hmm. And everybody on the show said travel.
Yeah.
Right. It's travel. You experience another culture, another language, another way of thinking, and put yourself in that curious mindset. And then they added, if you can't travel, then put yourself as if you were traveling. Put yourself in this world, wherever you're at, as if you really don't know it and you're curious about what it is going on at that particular time and moment. What I want to do now that I think, you know, I've given these principles, which, you know, we can take and yeah. What I'd like to do, as I said earlier, I want to describe a conversation that I had a friend yesterday, a friend who was in dire need of another friend. And as I stated, I want to really reinforce this. I will not reveal any information that will give away this person's identity. Nevertheless, I still called him and asked his permission to discuss our conversation on the show, and he was very positive. So
let's take a break, and then we'll come. We'll let this sink in a little bit. We'll take a break and come back, and you can delve into it.
That's a perfect time for taking a break. Thanks for the suggestion.
All right, let's do it. Let's do this one.
Hi, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie. Today is one of our
explorations.
Explorations, time of, you know, I call them solosodes, but this
like
is
that.
time for me to rant, although I'm not ranting, I'm sort of encouraging. And we're talking about listening and the value, the extraordinary value that we all are, the need that we all have to be heard. We have a need to be heard. Our voice, we want our voice to be heard because it validates who we are.
I'm alive. I'm here. I matter.
Yeah. You know, philosophers write, regular people talk, you know, but we want to know. So what I want to do, and I just rehearsing what I explained, that there are three tenets or three traits that I attribute to great listening. I'm going to do that. And I just really
No, listen,
encourage
I want you to
you.
Go through it right now. No, listen, I really want you to do this.
Okay, and listen, I'm going to do it in a second.
No, listen, right now. Okay.
Okay, I'm happy to do it. It's kindness.
No.
It's kindness, empathy, and curiosity. And they are amazing. As I'm repeating a bit of what we said earlier, but it is just so eerie that I was writing on this in my journal, and I was writing about listening, and I wrote about these three things came to my mind, the kindness, empathy, and curiosity, and it just hit me, that covered it. There is nothing else I would add.
Yeah.
There is nothing else I would add. And then I received this call.
Okay.
Now, my friend, it's important for me to say, is a Christian man, and he is co-parenting, and he has humongous difficulty with his ex-spouse, who loves the court system. And there's some very difficult situations with the children. And this man makes extreme sacrifice to spend, you know, a minimum of 1 week a month with his children.
Wow.
So he really makes, I mean, it's not an easy travel commute and all, but they work it out because he wants a father in their life. And a loving father in their life. And so he spends a lot of time doing that. That, you know, really impacts his paycheck. So,
yeah,
so because it requires some travel, and so he has that. So he's got a paycheck situation that's going on. He's got this ex-wife that is very, very difficult and wants to go to the court systems. And every time they go to the court systems, he wins the court system and she pays no attention to it. And so they have to deal with that. He is having, which we're going to talk, I want to talk a bit about, he's having an interesting experience with God, which you can't talk about in churched environments, but you can talk about with me because I am more open-minded. And he also received yesterday, he received devastating news regarding his business, and which was able to be resolved that day after our conversation. But the first phone call of the news was really...
blush was bad.
Oh, no, it was horrendous. I mean, it was make or break big time stuff. So the one thing that I wanted to talk to is that I went in there with these three ideals in mind. So the first thing I did
you really have these in your head?
Really did, Paul. Okay. I really did. They were front of mind, and the idea became, I knew this was not the time for me to give advice.
Not the time to be the preacher.
There was no advice given. There was no support. Oh, you know, you need to think about this. Now, I did offer a couple suggestions at the end, and I think I've said it before, I believe in offering suggestions over advice. Have you considered? What about this? What about that? And let the person... I want the person to come up with their own conclusion, because if they're just burping out my conclusions, it's not going to last very long. It's got to own to them. Now here is probably where I want to focus the majority of the rest of the time we have here, which will, you know, I don't think will take more than 5 minutes. But this person, his current spouse, are devout prayers and believing in God, and God's work in their business, and God's work in their life, and so they're regular churchgoers. So they look just, you know, like your everyday bumping heaven Christian, and
what would you call bumping heaven?
Yeah,
what's that mean? Like bumping up against heaven, or?
Yeah, bumping heaven, that's a high level of Christianity. You know?
I never heard that before.
Oh, really?
Bumping heaven. Okay.
Well, you've not hung around the evangelicals
All right.
enough.
Bumping heaven.
But what he actually said is, you know, and he didn't say it in pretty words, which I really loved. He says, you know, I just can't believe in this bullshit. I just can't believe in this all-loving, all-caring, all wonderful, all doing good, all mystical God, when all hell is breaking loose in my life, that we pray like crazy. We do. And, you know, the prayer in the Bible says, if you pray with the faith of a mustard seed, you can move a mountain. Well, we have the faith of a mustard seed. There ain't no mountains being moved.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, if they're being moved, they're being moved on top of me.
Yeah.
You know, right. this is not working. And so right away, the theologian in me, the ex-pastor in me, the very first thing that comes, and it was just ever so brief, but
right,
it comes,
right,
is to try to defend God.
Well, yeah, you got to stick up for the man upstairs here.
You know, and that's foolish. That's foolish. You know, Spurgeon, one of the, you know, 19th century great preachers said, you know, I'd rather defend a lion than defend God. You know, I can't defend God. You know, this is not, and I quickly realized this was not my role to defend God. This was not my role to explain to him why God allows suffering, which I quite frankly don't understand, because I have the same question
why
myself.
Why good things happen to bad people.
Yeah, according to Heschel, isn't it Heschel? Abraham Heschel was the author of that book. Which I love to say, I love the title, but never read the book. I think maybe I did read the book, but it was a long time ago. And so, you know what I did, Paul? Instead of trying to defend God, I asked him, tell me more. Define to me, I asked him, will you define to me how you view God? And he said quite honestly, I view God as very capricious, that God does not always answer prayer, and that God allows bad shit to happen. And those are the words that he used, and that I really don't feel I can trust God to save me through this. Now, I know I've just spoken heresy to the majority of people who are churchgoers, but I have spoken truth to half the world.
Who hasn't had that feeling?
Yeah.
The great Mother Teresa, it was revealed after she died, for years harbored doubts about, is there really God? Though she'd see this day after day, this suffering, this never-ending sea of misery, and you got
to
wonder.
You know, and my response to him was, you know, buddy, I can give you, I've read plenty of theological articles on why God allows good things to happen or bad things to happen to good people.
Right.
Why, you know, why there is suffering in the world and that we do have free will. And I could go on to a whole bunch of theology, but I just said, you know, that's bunk because you don't want to hear that. That's not where you're really at. All I can tell you is I get it. I get that you feel that way. There's been times I've questioned the same kinds of things, not exactly as you're questioning them, but I've questioned exactly the same kind of things. And without doing any type of protection of God, he felt heard. He felt like somebody really gets it and says, and it's just, if all I can answer is, I don't have an answer, but man, it sucks. This is really a horrible place to be in. And I really feel for you, and I just want you to know I care about that. I care that you feel about that, and I completely understand that.
Can I throw in one other thing? Somebody told me years ago that you can't tell somebody that their feelings are wrong. You can tell them their facts are wrong, but you can't tell them how their feeling is wrong.
Yeah, feelings are never wrong. Feelings are...
I don't understand it. I can't believe it. I don't agree with it. I don't like it. But that's the way you really feel. I can't say you're wrong.
Yes, exactly. And so it was right in here. See, I began and continued with kindness. There was a continual, you know, not a smile on my face like I'm some Pollyanna, but there was a feeling that I genuinely cared, that I genuinely was interested in what he had to say, and that there was no rudeness, there was no challenge to whatever it is, that he felt that I was kind. Secondly, I could empathize with this feeling about the
frustration,
reluctance of God to intervene and make everything all right, which is you know, a great long history or litany of theology written on that. But most importantly was my curiosity. Tell me more. Will you tell me exactly how you feel of God and what you have to do with it? And this was, you know, my guess was this probably took up an hour and a half of our conversation.
Wow.
And as he was able to express that, and I was able to accept it, understand it, ask more questions, and still, at this point, I was able to refrain from giving any suggestions. Have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? And then there came a time where I felt toward the end of our conversation, I felt he needed some words of hope. He was looking that he was looking for some words of hope, and that was extremely important to him. And so here's the way I did it. And again, in the process, he's the one making the decisions. So I asked him, how do you identify yourself? What out there in the world creates your personal identity? Is it your production, the products that you actually produce, or is it the process you use to get that production? And his first response, because now I must admit, I have an agenda.
You're leading towards something.
Right? Yes. So it is a question, and we must be very careful about asking questions. That's one of the things in listening classes. I've attended listening classes that actually discourage questions because it says it takes people off the direction. Mm-hmm. I am very careful not to take them off their direction, but to just get more clarity on what they're saying at that moment. At this point, I had an agenda because, as a matter of fact, within the week, I had experienced the very same thing myself. An agenda worked for me really well. I wanted to see if this would work for him. But it was just sort of, let's test the waters. So I said, where are your results? And he said, how do you identify yourself? And he identified himself by his results. And I pointed out,
I think that's true for most men in America. We're
result-driven. It is absolutely true for most men in America. And we have, I've engaged the services of a new life coach. Like, I need another one, but this one is really helping me. And she pointed out to me that I have just created these impossible standards for me to live up to, and that's why I'm always feeling like I'm on the verge of failure, or I have my anxiety disorder because I can't live up to the standards that I've set for me to live up to. And that becomes part of the question. So then I asked him, all right, so when you get these results, what are your talents or skills are you using to get these results? What gifts, what innate abilities? You have the gift of persuasion. You have the gift of being a visionary, of seeing things that other people don't see, and of taking paths to get there. You have the gift of leadership. People do follow you. People see where you're at. You have the gift of organization. What does it feel like, man, when you get a vision and all of a sudden the organization comes to mind, all the pieces start putting together, the pieces of the puzzle, what does that feel like? And he says, that is awesome. That's the most...
Rally the troops and they follow you up the hill.
And that's the most amazing thing. So I said, perhaps it is the process that defines you and not the result.
Mm-hmm.
It's the process of using these gifts that you had. And may I just throw in, just as a subset, just to think about, where did those gifts come from? Did they come from God? Okay, well, let's just leave that over there to think about that. You know, I'm not gonna belabor this whatsoever, but it is really important. And then, as my life coach pointed out to me, she used the illustration of Steven Spielberg. Now, Steven Spielberg has put out a couple films that are pretty good.
Couple.
Yeah.
One or two.
But, you know, he's also put out a couple films that absolutely suck, that are just, you know, that are terrible films, and he put $100 million into these films. Does he walk away thinking he's a loser? Does he walk away thinking my guess is he walks away thinking that one didn't work. That was a failure, but that I can learn from.
I wonder, maybe it's the order in which it happens. So if I have 10 films I make and the first 9 are bombs, how do you keep going to that 10th one that's a masterpiece? Whereas Spielberg arguably started off with some pretty big hits early on. Once you have a few hits, so you have a few failures along the way. It's not, you still got an image. You still are known by those hits. You wrote a hit novel. You made a hit film. You had a big, successful quarter. You can afford a few misses before it starts to catch up with you.
You're making my point.
Mm.
You're making my point. So it's not the result. It's the process. What is driving you along? I have this vision. I love having this vision. And I love having the opportunity to try to put it together, to try to make it all in the film industry, to make a film of it. And that is what continues to drive me, because there are several people that have had just lists of failures. Stephen Pressman, I don't know if you know Stephen Pressman, mm-hmm. He's written the book The Work of Art, not The Art of Work, but The Work of Art.
Mm-hmm.
And he also wrote, what was the golf that Will Smith was in the golf movie?
Bagger Vance?
Yes, or? Bagger Vance.
Right.
He's the author of Bagger Vance. Well, he had over 20 or 30 failed books and movies before he produced that. And Bagger Vance just kind of, and then these other books, the War of Art and some other books, he's really become a most popular writer. But he couldn't sell a book for a dime. He couldn't do it. But he had this envisioned in himself. So let's go back and
can I give you one other quote that pops to my head here?
Yeah.
I'm a big film buff, as you are, and particularly the classic films, the 40s and 50s and 30s. Alfred Hitchcock was supposed to have said, "I don't like making movies, but I love planning them." For him, shooting the movie was anticlimactic. He'd already seen
it
all
in his head.
Seen the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I suggested that. What do you think about that? And that completely changed his perspective of all this crap that was going on in his life.
Because he's judging it by results.
Yeah. And so quit judging about results and judge it by my efforts. And then it also kind of gave him a little hint about God, that God is involved in empowering him and giving him these gifts and these strengths. And it doesn't totally answer the question of God. I wasn't trying to answer the question of God. I was just trying to get him a little positive on that, to think about that. These are suggestions.
Can I give you one more thought that, again, this just popped into my head here? Maybe it's appropriate. My father died several years ago. Big, rough, tough guy. Came up through the Depression, fought his way through World War II, fought his way out of the ghetto, you know, became a big executive with a car company. And it seemed like he was always fighting the fight, right? And so I had to pick a Catholic, we're going to do a mass, I got to pick a biblical quote to put on the poster to say at the funeral. I couldn't come up with one. So they gave me some suggestive ones. And the one I've never forgotten since is the one from St. Paul, you know, "I fought the good fight."
Yeah.
And I thought that really, if I was going to summarize my dad's life, I think that does it all. He fought the good fight. Didn't always win. Lost a lot, in fact, but
yes,
he fought the good fight. He got up. He'd get knocked down. He'd get right back up again. It was all for him about fighting, never ending, never quitting, always fighting the good fight.
Now let's put all this together.
Right.
And we were getting very specific in the conversation, and you could see how the conversation was going. And this was a conversation where I was privileged to use all three of these traits or attributes. I went in with the attitude of kindness. That I am just kind. I'm here to be your friend. I'm your friend, and this is what we're going to talk about. There was no, you know, because we do some business together.
Right.
There's always issues in business. I didn't bring any of these up.
You know, the other thing you did is you didn't put you gave it time. Kindness requires letting it run its course.
Exactly. Exactly. That's a very good point. Yeah, letting it run its course. I was empathetic when he was telling me that he didn't believe in God or didn't believe in the goodness of God. I could identify with that. I couldn't be in his exact situation, but I could identify with that, and I could ask him questions about that and let him really go down deep into it, because a lot of times people will say, well, I just don't believe this crap about this ever-loving God that just does everything good. And, you know, look at the lilies of the field. And I look at the lilies of the field and I see poor children dying.
Yeah,
and it doesn't make sense. I gave him the opportunity to elaborate on that. I gave him the opportunity to really sort of exhaust himself of these complaints or problems or issues with theological issues, and so he could really do, as I said before, he could do the verbal vomit. And he could just, just let it all out. And I sat there and accepted it and understood every bit of it. But gave him the impression that I understood every bit of it, which I did. But I was saying, yeah, it's not, you know, I didn't try to correct him. I mean, how many times would we find, if we are indeed of that Christian persuasion, we're trying to protect God? Oh, you can't feel that way. This is
or protect our own belief in the process, right?
That's really what it's all about, Paul. You nailed it on the head. It's really about protecting our own belief, and that in itself, to me, shows an insecurity in our own belief.
Yeah, right. That, you know, that easily challenged. Right?
If I'm secure in my belief, then you're not going to challenge. You're not going to hurt me in this. I'm going to be able to deal with it. And then it is this continuing curiosity, is that I really want to know. Tell me more. Tell me more. Tell me more. And as I'm doing that, that person is willing until they're completely done telling. And then I can either tell them, I try to confirm that you are a wonderful person. Look at what you're dealing with. Look at all of this, and here you are, you're still in business, you're standing here, you're still married, you're caring for your children, you're caring for your business, you are a good man, you are a good man, you are a loved man. You know, to remind him of all of these good things, he walked away from the meeting forgetting about all of the crap in his life, all of his disbelief. Not forgetting about it, but putting it to a side to say, yes, I am capable of doing this. I am capable of doing that. And that is what I think great listening is all about. And that is what, to me, making another person feel better about themselves is all about. And when I do that, I feel like I've accomplished the reason I've been put on this earth.
Powerful stuff. Powerful stuff. You know, we all have a need to be heard, and we all have a need to be understood. You don't understand me. From our parents to our spouses to our employees, we're always fighting this. Nobody gets me. Nobody understands me. Nobody's listening to me. Here, somebody's listening.
Yeah. Tell me, you know, the beautiful words, tell me more. Tell me more. Explain that to me.
Do you think that's more difficult in today's time-conscious society? I was struck years ago. I had a conversation with a very good friend, sort of on the same things, where they were just venting, letting it all out. And we went on for hours and covered everything under the sun. And at the end, the friend looked at me and said, well, that was a waste of time. Not meaning that he didn't get something out of it, but he wasn't expecting to spend 2 hours venting. And when he let it out, his reaction was, as good as that felt, gee, I'm not supposed to do that. That's a waste. We didn't do anything productive. We just vented something.
Well, you know, maybe you bring up something, Paul, that needs to be added to my construct here. And that is some sort of affirmation of okayness at the end of it. Affirmation that, yes, I understand where you feel. Yes, it's legitimate. But somehow we live on hope. I don't care what you
no
say.
No question about it.
We live on hope. And that if we can provide a word of hope, a word, and the hope is an internal hope. It's not an external hope. The God is not going to bail you out of this. You know, the court system is not going to bail you out of this.
Your spouse
is not going to bail you out of this. But you, it's not just that it's up to you. See, I don't want to leave it that, because then that leaves
a burden,
work to
right.
do, a burden right. and a doubt to say, you have it. Look at what you've done.
Right.
And this is my observation. Look at what you've done. Look at all. And as I was able to point out to my friend, I could point out five or six things that this friend has done that are just marvelous things.
And sometimes it's just a different point of view. Two people can look at the same thing, and one person sees negative, and one person sees positive. I remember years and years ago, I went through a real tough period in my life. I got depressed, and nothing was working out, not like your friend. Everything seemed to be turned against me here. So I went to see a therapist. I listed all these terrible things and all the crazy things that had happened to me and all the crazy things I'd done. And to me, it proved I had failed. Hadn't gone where I thought I was going to go. Instead, I'm fighting all these fights and doing all these battles and waging all these wars. And the therapist looked and said, I don't know, it sounded pretty interesting to me. I'm like, well, I didn't tell it to you to impress you, make it sound interesting. I'm trying to prove my point. See, she's like, you're judging it. I hear the same thing, but I'm just telling you, I see it totally different.
I'm going to amend my three and make them four. So it's kindness, empathy,
yeah,
curiosity.
That's a big one. You got a lot of that.
Yeah, and hope.
I think that's where we leave it, because I think that's the uplifting note everybody wants to hear. Isn't that the basis? We're both movie lovers. Isn't the basis of 99% of movies? You have to leave them on an up note.
Yeah, but the hope is really critical, Paul. I think we have to understand that the hope is not from an outside source.
No, yeah, it's
that the hope is in us, and that we have this ability. And to remind them, not just, oh, you're going to be able to handle it, you know, you've handled tough issues before and all that. It's not just that, but to point out all the good things about them right now. I love to point out good things about people right now as I'm observing, because I'm observing what's going on in their life. And I make these observations and tell them what I see. Look at what you're doing here.
Yeah,
look
right.
at what you're doing there. And you don't see that. See, you don't focus on that. I know when I'm in my depressive states or in my worst states, I'm not focusing on what I can do. And that's why this, you know, I am truly going through a life-altering experience with this coach. I've had 30 years of therapy, and now I'm working with this life coach. It's giving me a whole new perspective of life. And the perspective of life is this, which is, I don't know if it has to do with our conversation or not, but it is this results versus process. I cannot live on the impossible standards that I've created for myself. My friend cannot live on the impossible standards that he has created for himself. What I can live on are the gifts and talents and pleasures and passions that I may have, and that I get to use those. And it's the process. It's like when I'm doing a painting.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm doing the painting, I may see the end result or frequently not, because it is emerging in my abstractness. It's emerging as it comes. A color comes on there. It goes, oh, it needs this. Now it needs this. But it's the process. That's the beauty of it. And I'm lost. I remember times, Paul, I would start a painting because I'd wait till my family went to bed. I'd start a painting at 10 o'clock at night, and I'd watch the sunrise.
Wow. That's getting caught up in it.
But it was not the result of the end of the painting. Maybe I liked the painting at the end. And
maybe you didn't.
Maybe I didn't. But that process of getting there.
Yeah.
So I think that's where our hope comes from. Our hope comes from utilizing our natural gifts and our natural talents, using those, and then every now and then things come together and it works.
I'm such a movie buff. I always think of a movie line. The one I think of is Scarlett O'Hara at the end of Gone with the Wind. Do you remember the last line she says?
I do not.
After all the misery, her life's been destroyed. The South's been destroyed. Rhett Butler has stormed out of her life. Everything's crashed. And she looks to the camera and says, but tomorrow is another day. Hope lives on eternal. Maybe things will improve tomorrow.
Yeah, it does. And I really want to add to that. I like that. And again, I've said it several times now. But a lot of time the hope is external. We do have to depend on somebody else doing something.
Right.
So I don't want to deny that. But the beauty of hope is recognizing your competency, your passion, your ability, and what good you can bring. And if you haven't brought good, you've had sort of a tragic life, look at those things where you can bring good. Because, and I will close with this. This is what I want to wrap it up with. I wrote a very depressing journal entry this same day. It didn't start out with this. I have to go through a process, and I wrote about nihilism, which basically means that life is meaningless.
Right.
And that we're just wasting our time. And so I was kind of into nihilism at that time, and it was one of my states. But as I started thinking about it, and I started thinking about what counts and what is meaningful on this planet? What is meaningful that I do? And you know what it came down to, Paul, as I started listing it?
What?
It was all relational. It was every single bit of it had nothing to do with me accomplishing anything in business. Like, for instance, that I'm involved, with this nonprofit Wells of Life. It's not that I'm successful at doing anything in there, but that the end result is a child is going to live, a family is going to have clean water. And that's the beauty of that. And that at the end of the day, and the same thing with talking with my friend yesterday, it was all relational. It was, how are other people going to be impacted? What are we going to do with other people? That's why, closing now, our conversations are so critical, and that we want to listen with intent to understand, not with intent to be understood. And we are going to use kindness, empathy, curiosity, and when the time comes, hope in your own capacity to reverse all that. Well, for now, this is Charlie Hedges. Paul, thanks for spending time with me today.
A lot to digest.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and ask you to be sure to check out our website, thenextchapter.life. That's .life. And until the next time, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.